and welcome to the Business of Property podcast. I'm Stuart.
I'm Simon.
And I'm Simon.
And we've been finding, buying and growing income from property for over 20 years. And we talk every week about the reality of running our property businesses. As always, we'd really appreciate it if you could leave us a cheeky little rating or a review if you feel that way inclined. So please do that. This is a bit of a budget special because obviously that happened on Wednesday, the 6th of March. So we thought we'd have a quick review of it. I mean, spoiler alert for those of you that are paying attention to the news, there wasn't too much that happened in those budgetary announcements. But, you know, a few things for us to talk about, which is why we welcome Simon Glastonbury, our resident mortgage broker. So welcome, Simon, back to the podcast for this episode. And thanks for joining us. So we'll start with the key things that we pulled out. The first one that I noted was the increase of the VAT threshold. And I think we're going to kind of speed through that. But just for reference, the VAT threshold, for those that don't particularly know, if you're an operating business, a trading business, and this actually doesn't apply to rental businesses because you don't apply VAT to rent, so you don't do that. But if you were a sourcing company, for example, or if you did other things in property outside of the rental, if you were taking other forms of revenue, then when you hit £85,000 in terms of annual revenue, you'd have to start applying VAT, so the current 20%. They've increased that from 85 to 90,000. We all said just before we hit the record button, we're not sure how much difference that makes to anyone. So we're not really going to delve into it. But it is positive because if you are generating incomes, then you've got a further 5K before you have to start worrying about it. So I suppose in the grand scheme of things, that is positive. The more interesting one for us to kick off with, chaps, is capital gains tax. Simon P, do you want to give us a quick overview on that?
Yeah, certainly. So this is only applies to higher rate taxpayers. And obviously it's capital gains tax. This is when you dispose of a capital asset. The tax rate that you pay has gone down. So we've gone down from 28% to 24%. Gone down from 24 to something else, that'd be even better. But no, it's gone down from 28% to 24% that you pay on the capital gains. Although it is worth noting that the allowance for the tax-free allowance for capital gains is already set to go down from this coming April. So I should have looked this up in advance, but I think it's going down from 6,000 to 3,000. Can either of you guys remember that one? Don't know, but anyway, but I'm sure it is going down at least. So they are giving us a bit of a tax break, but there's already on the books a bit of a reduction in tax-free allowance there. So I'm not sure. Well, earlier on when we were talking about this, I sort of suggested that maybe this wouldn't make that big a difference to people, but I guess maybe if you're looking at larger property values of in the southeast and things, maybe it would make more of a difference. Do you guys feel this matters?
Oh, I think it does. Yeah, I think my first view on it is it's a decrease, so any decrease is welcome. And then obviously, if we think about the average UK property value now compared to what it was, so if we think, let's for sake of simple maths, around 300,000, you know, and you'd bought that a few years ago. I mean, we always each of us individually think of our own personal experiences, and obviously, you know, I bought property. Well, my wife and I bought property 20 years ago, the flat that we have. And, you know, that 4% is definitely not insignificant. In fact, I'd say it's significant. So if we're talking about, obviously, £100,000 worth of gain, £4,000. And for me, that is significant. You know, it's £4,000 back in our pocket rather than the Treasury's. But I think you make a good point around the reduction of yeah, and I think they sneak some of this through the back door, is that they've reduced the tax-free allowance, because like even on that value there, you can see that's kind of negated it. If you've gone down from 6 to 3,000 in terms of the tax-free, we're almost coming out negligible. But I think, as you say, I think south-southeast, it does make a difference, makes a typical difference. Will it, you know, for property values of between 50 and 100, negligible, but I think for anyone with property for over 10, 15 years, I think it's definitely positive. Should it stay?
So is it going to convince more people to actually sell though? Because that I think is what they're aiming at.
I would say so. I mean, I'd certainly think with landlord clients I have, and as a business, they've been having sort of itchy feet for a while. Since rates have started to increase now, what, a couple of years, things are becoming more difficult, cash flow is becoming more difficult, and they're seeing this as a, I would expect, and we can only guess at this point because it's so new, but exactly like Stuart says, if you've got property in the southeast and you've had it 10 plus years, you've going to see some nice capital growth in that time, and longer. So therefore, is it then the right time for them to jump out of that property? They'd definitely be getting the calculators out to working this thing and seeing, right, okay, is now the time? I'm about to, and if you're sort of thinking on just your average mortgage from a landlord, and you're thinking, right, okay, I'm just about to jump out of a lovely 5-year fixed rate at 3%, and then, or 2%, whatever it may be that they've been on, I'm just about to jump ship onto a 5.5%. I've made plenty of growth on this property. Is it going to increase over the coming 5 years, 10 years? Have I had the good times? And the other thing was I read earlier that, right, will then, when Labour get in at the next election, will they then do a U-turn on this and say, actually, right, okay, well, yeah, we've taken a 4%, dropped it 4%, but, you know, well, actually, we'll just up it by, you know, they have got a history of doing this, certainly when it comes to the property market and taxation around properties. Right. Yeah. Well, let's start taxing people and putting that up for, I don't know, 24 to 34 or 30 or whatever the case may be. All of a sudden, if you've got that in your mind as a landlord, you're then going to think, is now the time to get out?
And that was my thoughts on it as well, Simon, because I thought, you know, that's at the front of quite a few people's minds at the moment, isn't it? Changing government, regardless of what you think. And that's why my first thought was, I wonder how long this will last, you know, the 24%. So for those that have been around the block a few times with property, and, you know, I speak to quite a few of them actually in terms of what I do, that are just getting tired with the whole thing. I think to Simon P's point, I don't think this would necessarily push people into selling. But I think if you're kind of getting to that stage of, I have kind of had enough, it's like, actually, this could be the right time, because if there were a change in government, or, you know, even same government but new people, then I'm going to take what I can get because of everything else that goes on, you know, in terms of what we're going to come on to for points 3 and 4.
I think you're right. I think it's just a case of, I mean, certainly for the, what I would call as the accidental landlord, the people who've just gone up and raised money on their existing property just because the value has gone up, they're thinking, hold on a minute, this just makes no sense. Is this an opportunity to get out? You know, the market clearly needs the properties from a lower end, when I mean lower end, the lower values, because that, as we know, helps the market. It's got to start at the first time buyer. And with those type of properties not being bought by buy-to-let landlords anymore, because they can't make it work with the rentals and the interest rate, we've got to get the first time buyers in. So we need those. So it may be an opportunity for those types of properties to be going back on the market, and for landlords, they'll definitely be getting the calculators out and having a very, very close look at this. And, you know, although, you know, some people are just here and thinking, well, I'm never going to sell. Well, that's all right. That's fairly irrelevant then. But if, you know, for people who are active in the market, constantly looking at new properties, I think this could be a moment where they're thinking, right, well, if I don't sell now, I'm not going to be able to sell potentially for another 5 or 10 years. So what do I do? Do I just cash in and see how we go?
Well, while we mentioned first-time buyers there, I wonder if, before we move on to the other things that were in the budget, perhaps we should touch on something that wasn't in the budget. And that this was their sort of talk of 99% loan-to-value mortgages. And I'd seen lots of press around beforehand, sort of while they were trialing this, presumably sort of experimenting with people's thoughts on it, basically saying that this was a pretty bad idea. But before we started recording, Simon, you said you were a bit disappointed that these weren't in there. So why do you think we should have 99% mortgages or
because he sells mortgages?
I wasn't going to mention that.
Sell, Simon. If I haven't got anything to sell, I'm out of business. You're absolutely right. Oh, got me again. I think it's a great product for the right person. Now that's the key here. It's for the right person. Now I'm gone from back in the days of 100% mortgages. We spoke briefly off camera about the one of the very well-known lenders, Northern Rock, who used to do 120% mortgage. Horrendous idea. You're in 20% negative equity before you start.
I still remember those queues outside Northern Rock when that all happened.
I know, absolutely, getting their money out and savings. That was not a good time, as we know. So, for the right people and at the right time, certainly in this market, we've got to remember with first-time buyers. I saw a snippet, I think it was from Savills yesterday, saying that the average first-time buyer in London was putting a deposit of £150,000 down. And you, wow, ooh, you know, I've had experiences of threes and £400,000 being from Bank of Mum and Dad, but on first time buyers, because you know that's where we are. You know, if they're buying, they want to come out of university and then looking in and buying in Shoreditch and Dulwich and Brixton, what have you. These properties are huge in value now. So what do you do? Trying to get a deposit is really difficult. So, but if you're in, let's just say, even if they put it in the, you know, there's been professional mortgages around for a number of years. So they're looking at doctors and accountants and et cetera. Now, if you're going into a big, let's just say, for example, a big city firm on a very nice salary, you're out of a university with a fantastic degree. The chances are, you know, your credit has been fantastic all the way up until that point. You're probably early 30s, somewhere around that sort of figure. The chances are you're going to stick to that property and make that work, because that's not your forever home. You're going to want that to grow. You're going to want to save. But what are the chances of you saving? You're paying £2,000-£3,000 a month in rent in London. And I'm talking about the southeast here. But that is a big, big marketplace. So how do you get these people on a ladder if they haven't got the bank of mum and dad? Then, you know, if you do your due diligence correctly as a lender, you make extra checks, you put things in other things in place. I'm not a product, you know, I don't look at creating products, but I think it is there for the right people. There will be plenty of brokers out there thinking, Simon, you're completely wrong. You know, it's horrendous. It only takes a slight dip in the market and also a sudden they're in negative equity. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I get that argument, totally. But it's not for everybody. You know, unfortunately, it's not for a low earner not being able to save in the background while they're buying this property. Because if you do go into this property, it's probably less than they're paying in rent, certainly in the southeast. So you're not helping anybody. If we have we're now talking about less rental properties available, and rental properties at the moment are being snapped up within days or hours in some instances. So that's clearly, we've got a demand there, a big, big demand. So therefore, if you're not able to get rental properties and you want to move people on the ladder, we've got to come up with a product which is available to people, which is realistic. So that's my view on it. I am massively disappointed. I think it's right for the right person, but it's been kicked down the road again to why, I don't know. I think the argument with LB is it's too easy to go into negative equity. And I do get that. I don't know if you get the statistics on figures where of the old 100% mortgages, not the 120, I'll put a caveat in there. But it wasn't a massive change in default rates. People still, you know, for the right person, if you're not going to default, we didn't have a massive drop in, at that point, you're thinking this is sort of 2007, 2008, when it stopped. We didn't have a massive drop in property values. So they weren't, it wasn't any different. Unfortunately, they didn't grow either. So they were kind of stuck where they were, but they were on the market. They were investing in their property. You're paying it back. And in time, that's still got to be better in my mind than renting.
Yeah, so, I suppose yeah. The challenges and you know, we're going to move on to the next point now of things that were in the budget. Yeah. But I think, obviously, you've talked about 2007, 2008, and that is, relatively speaking, still quite fresh in people's minds. Obviously, you know, we as taxpayers had to bail out banks. You know, not that I'm still resentful about that. And so you can understand in many ways as well why they are, you know, the banks have become that risk averse, because like you say, unless you've got, because like Help to Buy for a reason, you know, I can understand, you know, and again, we don't need to get into the politics or whether or not that actually worked or did what it was supposed to do, but you know, shared ownership, things like that, I can understand why sort of a 1% deposit could be flagged as high risk, given that it's still quite fresh in, you know, most people's memories that actually, if something were to happen, because I speak with someone, I work with an investor actually who bought a property in the north in 2002, who's trying to sell it now, who still hasn't recouped the amount he paid for it. So he's just slightly in negative equity. He's actually decided that he's going to take a small hit, well, a hit on it. So when he sells it, he's actually going to put some money back into it. So from that perspective, I do completely agree with you, by the way, because I think there should be something there, because I think we all agree, you know, for the next generations, we want them. But again, that's a typically British thing, isn't it? The ownership thing. We want people to own. It doesn't work the same way in all countries. So that wasn't in the budget, but multiple dwellings relief was in the budget. Point number three. I have some direct experience with this, but this was something that didn't cheer me up either, because I have been a beneficiary of that. Who would like to talk us through the multiple dwellings relief change?
We did. It was something I've, in all of my years, we were talking about it, Stuart, when you had the benefit of this, and we came at slightly different angles, where they're abolishing the relief anyway, but it's something from my point, I can see that my view is that they're trying to stop larger investors, larger companies from buying out multi separate properties. And that was where I was coming from. And you made a good point about buying flats, apartments or buildings which are literally connected or next to each other. So it's like buying one property anywhere, where I completely get that. But I get from what the government are doing there is they're trying to stop the very large investors just buying up numerous properties and using this relief as a bit of a backdoor, really. That's how I said it, completely non-connected dwellings.
So just for the listener, Simon, I'm just going to just to explain it. So, for example, if to those listening or watching, if you were to buy two properties, so let's just talk through my example. So I bought a property which was actually it used to be a commercial building that was converted into two student properties. So they weren't connected in any way. However, I bought it as one building, but they had two separate front doors, two separate kitchens, etc. But I bought it as a 13-bed, but it actually happened to be a 7-bed and a 6-bed. Now, I actually did split the title on that property as well, just because when I get to the stage of disposal or selling, that it would just make things easier and I didn't have to just sell the whole thing. But when I originally bought that, it was around £540,000. So that property went into that tax stamp duty threshold, whatever that is. So, you know, it goes above 250 and et cetera, et cetera. So I paid circa, you know, it's a few years ago that I've done this now, but I paid circa £26,000 in terms of stamp duty. However, once I got the right tax advice on it, and this was a couple of years afterwards, because I think around 3 or 4 years to actually retrospectively review these things. When we split the properties into two, they were valued correctly. However, it was valued at the time. So they both sat under different tax thresholds, and we got the 0 to 50 on each. And the end result was that as an investor, my company saved around £13,000 and that was rebated to your company. So that was quite significant. In terms of views, and obviously I'm sort of, you know, slightly tongue-in-cheek because, you know, I benefited from that greatly, but I completely agree with you and the sentiment that is actually, if we are, you know, pointing to the previous conversation, if we want people to get on the housing ladder, then we should make it easier for, you know, the individuals and people that want to buy flats rather than those institutional or big investors just coming in and buying, you know, tens of flats and not paying that stamp duty. You know, it could limit their ability to do that and therefore put more properties on the market. So I kind of do understand that sentiment.
Yeah, yeah, I think you're right. I mean, like I said, I mean, in my 25 odd years in the business, you're the only one I know of that I've come across that
always special and different. It.
Exactly. What do I expect? Anything different? Exactly. But yeah, it is. So if it cuts that out and we can get more stamp duty, we need to get this. We clearly, as a, you know, as a country, we need to get this money in. And if there's a loophole that people are clearly using for that, then yeah, it's one through gritted teeth we can kind of understand.
Yeah, so that's one that's not affecting very many people. But I think the last one on our list is something that will probably affect quite a lot of people. And in your special case, Stuart, it affects you again, or yeah, at least nearly, very nearly affects you. So do you want to give us another rundown on the fourth and final point that we're going to bring up from the budget today?
If you really want me to rant before the end of the show, then yes, I could have turned this just into a rant. Jeremy Hunt has impacted my life. Fortunately, I'm not a very resentful or bitter person, so I just get on with life. But so for those with holiday lets, serviced accommodation, whatever you want to talk about, there was the ability, there currently is until the changes come into place, currently is the ability where you can still offset your mortgage. Something we talk a lot about on this podcast is obviously Section 24, which means if you are investing in personal names, and that's something just to bring up as well in terms of CGT, that obviously only affects you if you're buying in personal, not in limited company. We should have mentioned that. But also serviced accommodation. So if you are buying a property in personal names, you cannot currently offset the mortgage against your, as a cost. However, with a holiday let or serviced accommodation, there is currently a rule if you're running that as a holiday let, you could. And I had just started the planning process with Kingston Council. In fact, we had a letter back from them to update it, to get the full planning approval so that we could run it as an official holiday let. Because I thought, yeah, well, that's good because that's going to save us a few thousand. No, Jeremy Hunt's decided that is no longer going to be allowed. So holiday lets are going the same way as private residential lets, where we will no longer be able to offset the mortgage. So again, I think that is going to impact. Well, it is going to impact a lot of people certainly in the UK.
Yeah, they're introducing this from April 2025, I think is what they said. But quite annoyingly, they haven't really published the actual details. So they've said they're going to take away the special cases for furnished holiday lets, as opposed to sort of that separates them from sort of generic buy-to-let things. So we're sort of assuming a bit that includes the change, or includes introducing Section 24 for furnished holiday lets. But we don't really know. We're not 100% certain. And there are other sort of special cases for furnished holiday lets as well, which maybe will be included in this change and maybe won't be included in this change. So we're not 100% certain exactly what the change will be. But I think it's fairly safe to assume that Section 24 is going to be in there, because I think that's going to be the big change. So I think, what do we think this is going to do to the market? Does this mean all of those people out there with holiday lets are going to sell up? Does it mean, Stuart, that you are not going to carry on with your plan to get the planning permission for this property? Where is everybody?
I certainly think this has got to be, from the mortgage side, there's been a huge increase in inquiries over the last 5 years or so for people saying, right, I want to buy this property for an Airbnb. Airbnb has just smashed into the market and is a real disruptor In the sort of buy to let investor market, and lenders have been really, really slow to come out with products and things for that market. But even so, they're massively popular. I mean, wherever you can go, if you use them, I've used them. They're fantastic. The basis from a consumer point of view, I've not seen it from the other side, apart from clients. Consumer point of view, it's absolutely brilliant. A really, really good idea. And it's like anything, isn't it? If something's come in and disrupted the market, and people are then thinking, right, I can get huge tax relief on it, or I can get relief on this because I can't get it anywhere else. What's going to happen? HMRC are going to come down and start, you know, are going to look at it. And they're just seeing that the you know, you read about pockets of areas around the country now which are just awash with holiday lets, and they weren't there before. Because when you talk about holiday lets, you don't necessarily think of, you wouldn't think of, parts of towns and et cetera. You always think of seaside resorts, really. But that's in Airbnb.
On this, what I think is probably going to follow a similar path that we've seen with the professionalisation of landlords anyway. If a lot of people are moving into limited companies for renting, and again, so if you're not running your serviced accommodation or your holiday let business in a limited company, then you're going to want to do that. And I think for those that are running it, and I'm going to use the word small scale, but define that however you want, but for those that are running it small scale, like I would, with just one little property, will that work out? It might wash its face just about, but then I might just think about either putting it back to a normal rental property and sucking it up, or moving things into limited companies. So I think it will follow a similar path. And with most people thinking about limited companies already, we don't know the stats on this of how many holiday lets were running through limited companies versus not. But then I know, because of the sort of professionalisation, the fact that you are running, you know, the holiday lets is more of a business than the most property, or commercial aside, than most property people when we're renting property. So I feel like it's going to follow the same path if it hasn't already. So this might just be a case in point where people say, okay, well, I've got to either do this as a limited company, or if I'm running, because if you're running at a level where, if you were already running, let's say 5 to 10 in personal names, then it's going to significantly impact your business. So then I think you've got to either look at how do we get this into a limited company and look at that route and take the cost, take the hit of that, the short term cost to professionalize, or you're going to have to get out, because ultimately no business, despite the conversations Simon and I've had, no business can run at a loss. Just not possible. It can do it for a short period of time. But for a medium to long term, every business has to make profit. And as we know, Section 24 massively impacts people's ability to do that.
Mm. Yeah.
So I think you know, they're the key points that we've talked about. And I suppose we've got you on the show, Simon G. So in terms of this, from a mortgage perspective, have things changed at all in the short term? Is there anything that you're seeing immediately happen?
Not massively exciting. Nothing really has changed an awful lot, chaps. But I mean, one thing which we've noticed since the sort of turn of the year, really. So we're only eight weeks in. Some of the lenders have put rates up, which is really against the sort of trend we were seeing before, or the back end of last year. And everybody, media were jumping on the fact that, oh, rates are coming down, which was all great news. We were all smiling and happy about that and thinking, right, there we go. This 2024 is going to be fantastic. And then the bleeders have started putting them up a little bit, and they've all followed suit. Now, why is this? We don't know. The swap rates don't seem to indicate any sort of massive changes from the back end of last year. They have gone up a little bit, yes, granted. But they've all gone up, say, about 0.5% all round. limited company buy-to-lets now. The best on the market value-wise, 5.64 for a couple 2 year rate, 5.24 for a 5 year rate. That's with a £2,000 fee. We have still got the wonderful 7% fees thrown in now at 3.89. People are using them, surprisingly enough, because they just don't have a choice. And I've had a number of conversations recently just said, I'll just take it, kick the can down the road, I'll deal with it in a couple of years' time when the market's picked up, and then I'll sell it then. Kind of heard that. I've heard that every 2 years for quite a number of years now. When the market picks up, I'll sell. When the market picks up, we're all expecting something to happen, and there isn't any particular indication that anything exciting will. So what's going to happen? Are rates going to come back down? I think we've just all got to sort of look at the rates as they are at the moment and say, this is it. This is where we are. This is where we are now. This is where we are for the next couple of years. I think we're here for the next three to four years of sitting on rates, residential rates at around about 4.5% at the moment. I mean, very, you know, these are very general figures. But then, and again, with limited company buy-to-lets, HMOs, they're at, 5.25% HMO, there's a 4.99 with a 3% fee. That's kind of realistic and where we are in the marketplace. But I think we all have to get used to this is where we are. Right, can you factor these in for the landlords out there, for the budding landlord out there? Factor these figures in for your shorter term, for your next 3 to 5 years, because there's nothing indicating that these are going to change drastically. Don't think we're going to go back down to the residential rates at that 1% and 2%. I just can't see it and moving forward.
Thank you very much. And it's a great summary in terms of where we're at, Simon G. And I think, as you say, we press ahead, don't we, Mr. Pither?
Indeed. And if you can't see the way forward, you can always take advantage of that capital gains tax reduction.
Yeah, so that's the positivity. And as we like to finish off the show positively, it's onwards and upwards. But as Simon G said, you know, I think most people now should be factoring in, 3% fee just into your numbers. It's just a good thing to do, you know. And if you don't get it, then actually you're going to be better off. But anyway, we hope you've enjoyed that show. We hope we've brought some value. And just to summarise, we've talked about VAT, we've talked about capital gains tax, multiple dwellings relief, and the serviced accommodation holiday let changes. And if you've got any questions at all, please do reach out to us. The contact details, as always, are in the show notes or in the links. Other than that, see you on the next episode.